We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to Bases Loaded. He struck him out swinging. Great slider from Will McIntyre for a shutout sixth. Your weekly look inside Razorback baseball.
Came in a tough situation and just made great pitches.
With the voice of Arkansas baseball, Phil Elson.
Slavens drives the 1-0 to right field. Pearson at the wall, leaping out of here. Two-run homer for Brady Slavens.
And Razorback legend, Bubba Carpenter.
He stayed on the tracks, didn't he, Phil? Look at him. He kept that barrel working through the zone.
Now, time to put those beer hats on your head.
The bases loaded, two outs in the ninth inning.
Here's Bases Loaded. Oh, and by the way, Bubba, it's a fair poll.
Welcome into Bases Loaded. This is our 11th edition of Bases Loaded. I'm Phil Elson. And let me introduce my partner, Bubba Carpenter, who I missed over the last few days. We get a chance to see him this weekend when the Hogs host A&M. Bubba, how are you?
Well, Phil, I'm not doing as well as I was doing last Monday. Let's just put it that way.
It's probably the right way to look at it. This is going to be a different edition of Bases Loaded. The Razorbacks just went through their worst week of the season and suffered their first series sweep at the hands of an opponent since 2018. Losing three in a row against Georgia. A couple of those losses were losses that are hard to take, hard to digest. I think there are times, Bubba, where you walk out of a baseball park and you say, you know what? They just outplayed us today. We weren't at our best, didn't have too much of a chance. Pitcher shut us down. Those guys just kept hitting. I only felt like that one game this past week. It was the Friday loss to Georgia when the Hogs lost 7-3 and really didn't get anything going until the eighth inning. When you look at the Thursday loss and all the chances with men on base, and it turns into a 6-5 defeat, and then you look at what happened on Saturday where you enter the ninth inning with a 4-run lead, those are not losses that are easy to look past, and they're not losses that are easy to take. No loss, I guess, is easy to take, but some you can understand. Others, you just kind of scratch your head and wonder, how did that happen?
You look at Thursday and Saturday, and you hear me talk about the what-if game all the time. I play the what-if. What if this happens? Or what if this is going to happen? Or what if we'd have done this? And you can what-if yourself to death in those two games. And, boy, those are tough losses. And SEC wins are so hard to come by when you've got a game like that, two games that you know you should have won. It is hard to swallow. And I try to look at the silver lining, and I say, wow, look what this team's able to accomplish with all the adversity they've gone through. I mean, look what they've still been able to accomplish. They honestly should have taken two out of three from Georgia. Georgia's a veteran team, veteran lineup, but we just didn't do a couple of little things in key situations. And, you know, it cost us. And I think the injuries kind of all combined kind of reared their ugly head this weekend and really showed it really showed up. It showed up this weekend.
Now, the week did start with a 6-3 win over UCA. And one of the really cool things about that game, and hopefully we'll be talking with him later on in the show, is that you had the two McLaughlin brothers on the field at the same time. Jack McLaughlin played a little first base for UCA Tuesday night. Ben McLaughlin, of course, has been starting as the Arkansas designated hitter for the past week, 2 weeks. And I thought that was pretty cool. I know you talked with Ben after that game, and it's a unique experience for the two of them, and probably the last time, as Ben said, that they'll share a baseball field together. And I felt like you and I talked about it on the air too. Bubba, that had to have brought back a lot of memories of playing with your brother.
You know, it did, Phil. I went down to do the interview on the field with Ben, and I didn't want to interrupt him. He was standing up in the stands with his parents and family, you know, taking pictures with him and his brother. And it really did bring back a lot of memories, because my parents used to be right down that third baseline at George Cole Field after every game. And I'm not like an overly emotional guy, but I mean, it really did. It brought back a lot of emotions. And I told Fuller and Oliver, I'm like, hey, I'm going to let him finish up what he's doing. I don't want to interrupt that, because it's a special time and you don't get those times back. I look at it now and, you know, it really was. It was kind of tough for me for a minute, but, you know, because my parents are both gone, and you know, you just think back about all the times. So I thought it was a really neat moment for them. I did not want to interrupt him. I gave him all the time he wanted with his family, and you were awesome, you know, moving the segments around so we could still get Ben in there. But yeah, I thought it was a really neat moment.
It was also the end of a 32-game home run stretch in Arkansas' 6-3 win over UCA. 32 straight games with a home run, 54 homers, 94 runs during that streak, 22 solo shots, and Arkansas had 22 run homers, 8 3-run homers, and a couple of grand slams. Hopefully it can start another streak. Though the home run has not been their friend as much of late. It's been more for the opponent's friend, and I think that's something we'll touch on later. Baseball's a humbling game, right, Bubba? I think you know that probably more than I do, since you played the game, and I'm watching it from up on high. I would share in the joys and the sorrows of a good performance or a bad performance or a win or a loss, but I don't have to wear that on my record. This sport is designed to humble you. And I feel like this past weekend, it's the most humbling weekend that Arkansas has had in a while. But it's not the only top 10 team that A, lost a series, or B, was swept. Top 15 teams, 6 of them were swept last week, including Arkansas. Vanderbilt was swept by the same Tennessee team that the Razorbacks just swept. ECU got swept. Louisville was swept. Texas was swept. Florida got swept by, admittedly, a top 10 team in South Carolina. There were also a couple of other top 10 programs that lost series outside of Arkansas: Vandy, Florida, ECU, Virginia. What it shows is that you're not perfect. You got to come back from poor performances. The case for Arkansas right now, and this is so much different from the last time that this program was swept in 2018 at Mississippi State. And anybody can look at that and know, hey, that team was a strike away from winning the national title, and they got swept on the road by Mississippi State. But that 2018 team was not dealing with the rash of injuries that this team is dealing with right now. So it's a different situation. And I think it's a different situation than any of the other top 10 teams that either lost a series or were swept. You understand the idea that injuries are part of baseball, Bubba. But right now, it has a feeling like Arkansas might have a few more injuries than others.
Phil, I've never seen anything like this. But to your point about baseball being humbling, there's something I say all the time. And I don't know who originally said it. I know it's been said a lot. But there's two types of players in baseball. There's those that are humble and those that are about to be humbled. And you see it all the time in the game. It's a frustrating game. But on the injury front, I mean, just look at what this team's dealt with. And you know, we can say Jackson, Cody Frank, Brady Tiger, whatever, Wagner, Parker Rowland, Tavian Josenberger. I mean, that's a lot of injuries for one team to withstand. Now, DVH and his staff, they do a great job of building depth in there. We had a lot of pitching depth in the beginning, a lot of position player depth, but boy, it's being tested right now. It's hard to expect a team to go out there and overcome. And look, I hate excuses. Oh, I hate excuses more than anything. My big thing is find a way to get it done. But it's at some point, you know, a lot of those injuries catch up to you. And you said about the top 10 teams getting swept. That's the nature of the game in college baseball today. I mean, there's so many good teams out there. There's so many good players sprinkled on teams across the country. So many veteran players. Anything can happen on a weekend. I mean, it really can. I mean, I think your margin for error is so small, especially in the SEC. When you get a chance for a win, you've got to make the plays. You give a team extra outs, they're going to take advantage of it. Arkansas's done it all year. When a team gives us extra outs, we take advantage of it. We win those close games. This weekend, we didn't get it done. Therefore, we got swept.
You know, and a lot of times the humbling experiences are something that you learn from, that you grow from. Maybe that's the best way to put it. Instead of learn, you grow from it. I keep going back to thinking about that 2016 season, which was such a bad year for Arkansas baseball. It stands out in so many ways. The only way you need to know is that it's the one team that hasn't made it to the NCAA tournament under Dave Van Horn. Didn't even make it to Hoover. That team lost their last 16 games. That team had Blaine Knight, Isaiah Campbell. They had Carson Shaddy. They had Grant Cook. They had Eric Cole. You know, they were a lot of players that were in the infancy of their careers that turned into a near national champion. And I felt like this last weekend, I saw a little bit of that. And look, this isn't the 2016 team. Arkansas is right now in a much better position than that. But I'm looking at a bullpen that right now is kind of made up of players that have not been tested in college baseball until this year, or true freshmen. You look at the last game of that series at Georgia, and Hagan Smith starts 5 innings. Hagan's been with the program for a year. Gage Wood gets the ball after that. And we've had Gage on here before, and he's been really good, but he's also a true freshman. Christian Fouch, same thing, true freshman. Ben Bibee, who allowed those 2 home runs in the 9th inning on Saturday, true freshman. They're going up against 5 graduate transfers, a couple of juniors, and 1 freshman in the Georgia lineup. So that's exactly what you're pointing out to, Bubba. These are 18-year-old kids. They're going up against 22 and 23-year-old grown men. And those grown men have been in these situations before. And this is kind of, you know, the first time that Gage and Fouch and Bibee have been in these situations against much older players. So I can only think it's terrible in the moment, but it's something you learn to grow from and look back on later in your career and say, hey, remember when that happened? Yeah, look how many games in a row I've saved now.
I say they're freshmen, but you know, you think about it, they're 9 months into their baseball, Razorback baseball career. You know, they come in August. They're almost not freshmen anymore, but they are. There is to see them out there against some of these veteran hitters, and they're learning. Hopefully it can affect them 2 different ways. It can be detrimental to them where they lose their confidence and then they start to go downhill, or it can toughen them up. And I think what it's going to do is toughen them up. I think I'm a big fan. I tell my kids all the time, whatever age, look, you got to be tougher. Play the game tough, you know, and you know what I mean by that. I think anyone listening knows what I mean by that. And I think it's going to be good. It's going to toughen these guys up. And we're building still. When we get these guys back, if we can survive the next couple of weeks and we start to get these guys back, Brady Tigard's coming back. We'll get Wagner back. Josenberger, that one worries me. A hammy can linger for a long time. But we get these guys back and get everything rolling again. I think the fact that we've had to deal with all this right now is going to make us better at the end of the season. Now, the key is to survive long enough to get these guys back. And I think we're Razorback baseball players. I think these guys put on that uniform. You got to play a certain way to wear a Razorback uniform. I think these guys all understand that. And I think they'll find a way to get it done. I really do.
One other thing that does worry me, and it is an injury aspect, is Parker Rowland's back. It kept him out of all 3 games against Georgia. And look, Hudson Polk improved as the series went on. I mean, he ended up as one of their better hitters on Saturday with a home run and a sacrifice fly, and caught very well that game as well. You need a couple of catchers right now, and Arkansas is down one of them, and back spasms are a tricky thing. I've learned that myself over the course of my life, and really over the last couple of weeks too. So who knows? I mean, he'll be able to come back and play. You know, right now, Arkansas's got Cal Kilgore, who transferred from New Mexico State. He's redshirting. And then the emergency catcher is Peyton Holt. You don't want to have to use those guys if you don't have to. So this week is important, hopefully, to be able to get Parker Rowland back. But I also feel like Hudson Polk showed he had a bad day on Thursday. He had a better game on Friday. He had a good game on Sunday. That he belongs on this team. He belongs in the lineup, perhaps, every once in a while. And so maybe that's a net positive. But you got to get Parker Rowland back because he's been your catcher for most of the season.
You know, you look at the pitching. For pitchers, they get comfortable throwing to a certain catcher. Pitchers get used to a way a catcher calls a game, and that can have a huge impact on the game as well. Is okay, Parker Rowland might have called this pitch here where Hudson Polk calls that. I know they game plan for these guys, so that's not a big deal. But really what it does, having that second catcher in there, is it frees Dave up late in the game to make more moves, whether it be a pinch hit situation, defensive, whatever move you're wanting to make. But boy, when you're stuck with one catcher, it kind of locks you up a little bit. You can't do a whole lot. So hopefully Parker's going to get that thing well. I've seen you deal with it the last couple of weeks. I know how bad a back can be. And so, yeah, hopefully we get that part of it figured out.
One question to ask about this last series with Georgia. These 2-1-run losses by the Razorbacks, 6-5 on Thursday, 9-8 on Saturday, are their first 2 1-run losses for the season. Is that something to worry about? Because 1-run losses usually show you that you just didn't do quite enough. People will always point and say, hey, we were that close. So you were one hit away, this or this. Sometimes when it starts to happen on a more consistent basis, it's not a sign of you being that close to being good. It's a sign of a team being bad. I don't think this is a bad Arkansas team, but 2 1-run losses this last weekend is a little bit alarming after none until this weekend.
Well, for me, Phil, it comes down to Razorback baseball. We didn't play Razorback baseball on Thursday. You know, we had a couple of errors, routine double play ball, another ball that we didn't make, you know, that led to a run. You get the bases loaded in an eighth, nobody out. All year, we found a way, whether it be sack fly, ground ball, whatever, we found a way to get it out, get maybe just one run, if not driving all three of them. But we found a way to get it done. We just didn't do it this weekend. And, you know, you don't play Razorback baseball, you don't win those one-run games. And I think that's what this team's been so good at all year. I expect us to come back this Thursday. A&M coming into town, we're going to have our hands full. But I think we're going to be fine. I really do. But I know exactly what you mean about, you know, a one-run game can mean two different things. We're that close to being really good or that close to being bad. The team that wins or doesn't win those games. So I think we just made a few mistakes this weekend. It just wasn't our weekend, and it happens.
Second inning is our performance of the week. Had to go to Caleb Callie.
There's a drive by Callie to left field. Way out of here. Here's the pitch. Swing, shot up the middle, base hit for Callie. Diggs going to be sent around third. 1-1, ground ball, third base, Callie near the line, fields it, throws to second for one. Stovall's return, rack him up. Fine double play started by Caleb Callie with Stovall making the turn in the middle. Here's the pitch. Swung on, belted by Callie to deep right center. You got to go. Get out of here. The second home run of the day for Caleb Callie.
Callie's really turned into everything that the coaching staff said he was in the fall. It just took a little bit of time to get it going. And what the coaching staff said he is in the fall is a guy that is a middle of the lineup hitter that doesn't swing and miss very much. He can hit it to right field, to left field, to center field, over the fence. And the plays that he can get to at third base, he will make those plays. I'm watching exactly that description of Caleb Callie every time he goes out for the last couple of weeks. Bubba Callie this week, 4 games, 9-for-16, had the 2-homer game on Saturday, and he drove in 7 runs last week. He also did not strike out. He's gone 26 consecutive plate appearances without a strikeout. This is for a guy who's hitting for power. He's swinging hard, but he's not swinging and missing. It's pretty amazing to watch him right now.
No, it's fun, Phil. And he's driving the ball to all fields. I like what you said about the strikeouts. Think how he started out the season in Globe Life. His first eight at bats, I think he struck out seven times. I mean, that's how crazy the game of baseball is. But I tell you what, he's settled into the middle of that lineup. He's driving in runs. He's getting good pitches and hitting them. He's not chasing balls out of the zone. And he's doing what good hitters do. When a pitcher makes a mistake, boy, he takes advantage of it. He's putting the barrel on the ball, and that's what you want to see.
Bubba, last week, Caleb Kelly saw 46 pitches. He swung and missed on five of them. So he hit two home runs this week and swung and missed five times. It's kind of nuts to think about it. He's 16 for 32 over the course of a nine-game hitting streak. He must have great eyesight. His hand-eye coordination is terrific. And I want to ask about third base, the way he plays third base. I think he's got a little bit more range than we thought. He's not a shortstop playing third base, but he's a little nimble on his feet over there. I think he's a good third baseman. He's definitely not a minus in the field.
Back to your five swing and misses, 46 pitches, five swing and misses. That's incredible, especially in the SEC play. But that just says, Phil, it goes back to the basic thing of get a good pitch, put and be on time. You know, he's getting good pitches. If you're not swinging and misses, that means you're swinging at pitches in the zone. And that's what, boy, that's the key to hitting right there. Get a good pitch, be on time. On the defensive side, I agree. You know, and here's the thing, that early in the year, I still think we were guilty of comparing Caleb Kelly to Caden Wallace, which is just not fair to Caleb Kelly. That they're different players. I mean, look, Caden Wallace is a future major leaguer. Not that Caleb Kelly's not, but I mean, Caden Wallace was just different. But I think Caleb settled in and done a great job. What I love about Caleb's story is how he struggled mightily at the beginning of the season. And you know what? He didn't panic. He kept putting in his work, coming out, getting his swings in, taking ground balls, and then it's all starting to come together right now. And that's what I love about it, is that's the beautiful thing about baseball. It's not where you start, it's where you finish.
Yeah, I like that Caleb comes across very easygoing. He obviously didn't let his early struggles affect how he practiced, how he interacted with his teammates, or the way he viewed himself on this team. And it certainly has paid off. Caleb Kelly is a third baseman. Like, that's his position. Maybe he could play some first base too, but those are the only two positions I'd see him. I can see Caden Wallace playing anywhere on the field. Like, Dave, we used to talk about Wallace could be a center fielder. We saw him play right field his first year. He was a shortstop playing third base. I think Caden could play any position on the baseball field, maybe minus catcher. And I see Cali as a third baseman specifically, but a good one.
I mean, you're right. That's why it's not fair to compare the two of them. I mean, they're two different type players. Caden just ended up playing third, but you're right. Caden could play anywhere on the field. I mean, he's just a special talent. And so, I mean, it's not fair, but I think people in the beginning made those comparisons, and it's no different than comparing John Bolton to Jalen Battles, Peyton Stovall to Robert Moore. I mean, you can't do that from year to year. Those guys are gone. These guys are who we have now, and they're wearing a Razorback uniform, and they're good players.
It's like comparing the two people that I've done Razorback baseball games with. It's just not fair to either one of them to compare Bubba Carpenter to Rick Schaefer, you know, because the two have positive things about them that are totally different, and interacting with the two of you guys is completely different, and one is not better than the other. It's just you guys are totally different. And I will say, I've had a lot of different kinds of partners in my career, even the radio show that I host right now. I mean, this is an eclectic group that I've worked with, Bubba. Matt Jones, Rick Schaefer, Bubba Carpenter. Third inning is our stat of the week. It's not a great stat. Arkansas pitchers allowed 25 runs last week, Bubba. 17 of those runs were scored on homers, and opponents hit 9 home runs. The home run usually is a friend to the Razorbacks. They have out-homered their opponents by a ton over the last few years. As I look back at 2022, Arkansas hit 106 home runs, they gave up 60. In 2021, hit 109 home runs, gave up 54. 2019 season, 88 home runs, gave up 55. 98 home runs for in 2018, allowed 57. 83 home runs in 2017, gave up 53. You hear the theme there. Bubba, in the last five full seasons, and we're not counting 2020 because it wasn't a full season, Arkansas has hit 484 home runs and allowed 279. This year, it's a little bit different. The Hogs are hitting their home runs. They've hit 64. They're on a pace that we've seen for the last few years. They've also allowed 54 home runs, which is second most in the Southeastern Conference. And this is on a pace of 73 home runs allowed by the staff in a 54-game schedule. Gone back and looked, and the last numbers I can look at are 2004. Nobody's hit that many home runs against Arkansas since 2004. The home run right now is a friend for the Arkansas offense. Unfortunately, it's also a friend for the opponent's offense.
I'm going to make an excuse, Phil. Now, we've given up some home runs. I think Georgia was a very hitter-friendly ballpark. Once again, I'm going to go back to a lot of veteran players that are stronger, older players than we've seen in the past. I mean, that's just where we're at right now in college baseball. But the other thing is the baseballs are different. I'm telling you, I ask a lot of people. You see me chart hard hit balls in my scorebook. You can't decipher a lot of what I put in my scorebook, fortunately, but I can. And there's a lot of hard hit balls. More balls are hit over 100 miles an hour than I've ever seen before. And the ball is different. So therefore, it's coming off the bat faster. It's going to go farther. Now, we've made some bad pitches. We have. And teams have taken advantage of it, and that's what good teams do. But I think there is a difference in the baseball. I really do.
Well, I think there is too. And there are a lot of folks who've been around college baseball for a long time who think that there's something up with the ball as well. So I think that's part of it. But still, it's the third most home runs allowed in the SEC. Ole Miss has allowed 67. Mississippi State has allowed 56. Arkansas has allowed 54. Now, there's a positive lean to this. The two Mississippi schools both have team earned run averages that are over 5.5. Arkansas's ERA is 4.96, which doesn't sound good, but that's right in the middle of the pack this year. Part of it is because the ball is different. SEC teams have an ERA that's over a half a run higher than the league did last year just in SEC games alone. So that's part of it. And maybe there's an aspect here that Arkansas is allowing these home runs, but they're not allowing as many runs as the other teams who are allowing this many home runs too.
You know, the solo home run is not going to beat you. What's going to beat you is the walk, the error, then the three-run homer. That's what's going to beat you. And, you know, the key is limiting that, in my opinion. I'm not Matt Hobbs, but, you know, if you give up a solo home run, now you don't want to give up a solo home run in a tie game in the bottom of the ninth. But other than that, the solo home run is not going to hurt you. It's everything that happens before that mistake pitch or that home run pitch. That's what hurts you.
Into the fourth inning, we have a couple of listener questions here. Jay Tort on Twitter said he thinks Ben McLaughlin's stick has earned him a spot on the lineup. Do you see him getting time at first base when Wagner comes back? And I think McLaughlin's a pretty darn good hitter. Ben's had 12 games as a position player, 9 for 27. That's a .333 batting average. Of his 9 hits, 8 are singles, has 1 triple, and 4 runs knocked in. McLaughlin this past week finished 6 for 17 at Georgia with 2 RBIs. I like that he's got a line drive stroke, Bubba, and I like that his line drives go gap to gap, maybe line to line, left field line, right field line, and as a left-handed hitter, seems to be somebody that could have success against left-handed pitchers too. He's really balanced, doesn't seem to get on that front foot too much. I see him as a designated hitter, though. Right now, other than a first baseman. And part of that is because Brady Slavens has been such a good first baseman in the field. You know, Brady might have struggled a little bit at the plate in the series against Georgia, but he made some really nice plays in the field. And we know how Dave Van Horn feels about infield defense. Like, you need Brady's bat to pick things up a little bit, but he's been really good with the glove. And that's why I'd see McLaughlin staying as the designated hitter, with Slavens remaining at first base.
I think so, Phil, because look, when you're, let's just go Brady Slavens. If he picks two balls and that saves a couple of runs or makes a good play to his left or right, flips to the pitcher, gets you out and saves two or three runs, that's like driving in two or three runs. So there's a huge value to that. You know, I haven't seen Ben enough at first base to know if that's the answer. I agree. I think right now he's a DH. I think eventually he's going to find a position. You look how Kendall Diggs has gotten so much better. I think he's gotten way better out in right field with just a few games under his belt. You can take fly balls all day off a fungo, but it's different when you step in there in a game and you're taking live balls off a bat. But what I like about Ben, and I even after Tuesday night's UCA game, I compared him to Kendall Diggs. His approach at the plate is a lot like Kendall's. He swings. He does a great job of controlling the at bat. He swings on his terms. He doesn't let the pitcher dictate it. He swings on his terms, gets deep in the count. If he likes the first pitch, he crushes it. You know, if not, he'll work the count till he gets a good pitch. He'll fight off a pitcher's pitch, get a good pitch, and crush it. But I do think he has earned a spot in that lineup, whether it be DH or wherever he ends up. I think I agree with you, though. I think it's as a DH, but definitely he's been a force in that lineup.
Too Tall Charlie asks a question that I see a lot on social media, and I get every once in a while. And he inserted a period after every word on his question, I guess for effect, but that's how you do things on Twitter, is for effect. Too Tall Charlie asked, why doesn't Bubba go on the road? Bubba, I'll let you explain it. You know, why don't you go on the road?
Do I have to answer it like it was typed out there?
No. You don't have to put a period at the end of every word if you don't want to.
Well, Charlie, I tell you, the reason I don't is I run a baseball academy. I coach younger kids. I coach high school kids. I have a lot of development that I believe in on the youth side of baseball. And, you know, I've got an 11-year-old son that's playing tournaments, and, you know, I'm coaching his team. I'm helping out with other teams. There's a lot of stuff that I do. Hopefully, I'd like to think I'm coaching future Razorbacks right now, teaching them the game of baseball. And, you know, it's something I'm real passionate about. You know, now I do travel to SEC tournament and do any postseason stuff. Hopefully we'll end up in Omaha this year. But as far as just your regular SEC weekend, I don't know, I it's just hard for me to be away from home and from what I love to do, which is coaching. I love coaching. As much as I love sitting in the booth next to Phil, I guess that's my second happy place. My first happy place is out on the field coaching and developing kids. And so I guess that's why I don't go. If I thought being there this weekend would have changed the outcome, I would have jumped on the plane with Phil and I'd have been there with him in a heartbeat.
Are you sure it's not because you need some time off from me?
Well, I didn't want to go there, Phil, but no, you're my happy place. One of my happy places most of the time.
That's so cute. That's very sweet. Wasn't there? There was, now in the postseason, things get a little bit different because, you know, you schedule out your tournament so that you can make all the home games and then you'll travel when the team's on the road. But in the postseason, like, you can't necessarily plan like that. Wasn't there a super regional that you drove 6 hours after each game and then came back for each game too?
Yeah, we were playing Wichita State, and it was a showcase tournament. And so I would go coach my games, and I would drive back and get to the booth all sweaty and smelly just in time for the Razorback game. And then I would leave after the game and drive back and sleep a couple hours and then get ready for the next day's showcase game, drive back and forth. But I love it, though. You know, I don't complain about it at all. I love it. I love baseball. I love everything about it. And I love teaching it to the kids. I want them to have a love for it. If they go to college to play college baseball, great. But, you know, what I want them to do is have a passion for baseball, learn lifelong lessons through the game of baseball. And if they go on and play for the Razorbacks or somewhere else someday and get their school paid for by baseball, then that's even a bonus.
Our listeners can probably tell that, I mean, so you're a coach, but what you are is you're a teacher. That's what coaches are. They're teachers. You love to teach the game. And you're even doing that on our radio broadcasts. I feel like one of the things, Bubba, that makes you so good at analysis on the radio broadcast is that you can talk baseball with all levels of expertise. and not insult anybody at the same time. You can stand there and talk hitting with Nate Thompson for hours and other coaches and ball players for hours. And I mean, really get into the weeds with guys where hitting is their livelihood. And then you can also teach 6-year-olds the things that are important for them to learn and get on their level. And you can do it with a layperson that's in their 20s or somebody that's an avid baseball fan that's in their 30s or 40s. Bubba, you are such a great communicator when it comes to the ins and the outs of what's important about what a ball player needs to do at a certain moment. And that's why I love having you on the broadcast. Aside from the fact that we kick it around and joke a lot, is that you can communicate baseball to any age level, any expertise level, and you don't even know how good you are at that.
Well, Phil, I appreciate that, and I love doing it. I love doing the broadcast. You know, talking about the broadcast, I remember sitting in the truck with my grandpa years ago, and he had his big brown bag of what he told me was Coke back then, but it wasn't. I learned later. listening into Texas Ranger games, and so when I'm on the radio, I picture a grandpa or a mom or a dad sitting there with their kid listening to the game, and I want to be able to explain it to the grandpa, to the mom, or to the kid. I want them to all understand what's going on in the field. You do a great job of painting the picture. I got to listen to you a lot this weekend while I was out of town coaching. But I like to fill in the pieces and try to explain the smaller things or sometimes the bigger things to the people out there listening. I think, I don't know, that's the way I view it, but I really appreciate you saying that, and I love doing it.
Our fifth inning is Bubba's Hit Kit. And again, this doesn't have much to do with hitting. The theme of the team right now, unfortunately, is injuries. And when I look at who's traveling with the team, Jared Wagner was on the trip at Georgia. Cody Frank was on the trip at Georgia. Brady Tigert was there too. He was there because he's going to throw a bullpen, but he wasn't on the travel roster. And Tavian Josenberger, unfortunately, strained a hamstring on Saturday, and we don't know how long he's going to be out. But I wouldn't be surprised if he travels with the team the next time they go on the road, which is next week at Mississippi State. And these guys are into the game, Bubba. Like, I watched Tavian when he had to come out of the game Saturday, right next to Wagner. They were belly up to the fence in the dugout. They were cheering on their teammates. They were involved in the game, even though they weren't playing. You could see Cody Frank was the same way out in the bullpen with his sling that's holding his arm up so he doesn't have to feel that lat muscle that got torn. So I feel like these guys, you know, they're not playing, but in their mind, they're still into the game as much as they are when they're in the lineup.
And that's really the most important thing, Phil, is baseball is a mental game. So you got to believe that you're there. You got to be there mentally, whether you're in there in the game, actually physically getting it done or just mentally. It's so important. And you know, I talk to people about the mental game of baseball all the time. You know, years and years ago, I had a chance to sit down with Harvey Dorfman, who wrote a book called The Mental Game of Baseball. That changed me. And I read an article once about Mark McGwire talking about just visualizing pitches. So I'm going to speak more from a position player aspect here than a pitcher. As a position player, you can visualize every pitch that you saw. And I'll use this as an example. In 2000, I was with the Rockies. I was playing in minor league game, Triple A. I tore a lat muscle, so I really sympathize with Cody Frank. Mine wasn't as bad as his. I'd strained it, I guess, but it felt like I had a knife in my side. I was out for 31 days. Didn't pick up a bat for 31 days, which is that's hard for me to do. But I knew at some point I was coming back. So what I did is I took the last games that I played in, and I visualized every pitch of those at bats, and every day I played those 4 at bats out in my head, every pitch. It's like I call it mental reps. I'm getting the mental reps. And then when a pitcher would go to throw his bullpen, I would stand in as a hitter and pretend like I was hitting. Even though I couldn't swing, I was tracking the ball mentally. And then it's just like you're in there. So one day, Chris Crone, my AAA manager, came to me. I was just supposed to start my rehab. It was 31 days in, hadn't swung a bat. And he said, Bubba, can you go today? And I said, well, I'm supposed to start my rehab today. Today's the first day I can swing. And he said, well, I really think you ought to be ready to go. And he winked at me. So I said, I'm good. So he put me in the outfield. What had happened, Larry Walker had gotten hurt in the big leagues, and they were going to call me up. So he gave me that little wink. I played one inning of right field, came in, and he said, pack your bags. You're going to Colorado. You're going to the big leagues. And I said, well, can I get one at bat first? And he's like, no, are you crazy? He said, what if you get hit in the hand with a pitch or something happens? And I just wanted one at bat. But even though I'd played it out in my mind, so long story short, I get up to Denver, get off the plane, get there in like the fourth inning. My flight was delayed. I was flying out of Nashville, actually. Get up there. I pinch hit in the eighth inning. I'm facing a guy, Jay Johnstone. I wasn't nervous about being in the big leagues. I was nervous because I hadn't seen a pitch in over a month. And the first pitch was a ball. Second pitch was a 1-0 fastball. And it was 98 miles, or I swung and hooked it foul, like way foul up in the stands. And I stepped out and looked at the radar gun on the board. And it said 98. I'm like, I'm going to be just fine. And everything just slowed down and I relaxed right there. But it was those mental reps. I know that's a long-winded story. But so these guys that are out, Jared Wagner, Tavian, anyone that's out from a hitting perspective, you could trick your mind into playing games every day. It's like you're never left the lineup. And it works. I know it sounds corny, but the mental reps do wonders for you. And from then on, I did it all the time. And it really does work. Good games, bad games, whatever. I'd go home and replay those at-bats in my mind. And then if I made a mistake on a pitch, I could mentally fix it right then. And then the next time I see that pitch, I'd hammer it. And so that's kind of my hit kit for this week. And I know it's kind of a little bit of a different path than we've gone down, but with all the injuries, I think it fits perfectly into how these guys can come back, step right back in the lineup and rake from day one.
When you're hurt and you know you're not going to play, you don't have to worry about anything other than watching the game that day as closely and intently as you possibly can. And you might see some things that a couple of your teammates don't see. And you can inform them of those things and be a really valuable member of the team. It's not just a matter of clapping them on the back and congratulating them for a good at bat or a good play in the field. You can still have some value to a team just by being there. And then on the other hand, like I've seen, and this might be a little different in college ball, but guys that were hurt in the minors, if they were in the dugout, sometimes they would just try to be a sponge, pay attention to everything the manager is doing, you know, why he's moving the fielders in a certain way, you know, why a certain pitch is being called at a certain time. It is an opportunity to learn a little bit about the game, and it might be easier to do that in some cases than when you're sitting there worrying about your next at-bat. And then the other aspect of this too, Bubba, it's like baseball's not bicycle riding. You can just hop back on a bicycle and start riding again. With baseball, the mental approach, you can't just automatically get right back into that mental spot that you were before the injury. So staying on your toes, so to speak, mentally is a pretty important thing to do.
Absolutely. And you made a great point right there talking about what you can see when you're not in the lineup. So when I wasn't in the lineup, I started getting so much better at picking up pitches, pitchers tipping pitches. And it was amazing. You start to look, most guys tip pitches. You just got to figure out what it is. And you hear me talk on the air all the time, Phil, during a broadcast. Oh, he's showing his changeup, or he's doing this on his breaking ball, or this is how his fastball, it's a different tempo. I mean, you can see so many things when you're not in the game. Well, I learned to do that when I wasn't in the lineup, because the game just slows down so much and you see things that you normally don't see. And then when you get back in there, it's also like Jared Wagner right now, he can watch how they're pitching like a Caleb Cali in the middle of that lineup, because that's how they're going to pitch Wagner, similar to how they're pitching Cali. So he can watch and pick up on little things that maybe he wouldn't see when he's in the game. And so that's a great point, what you said about just when you're not in the lineup, how you see things differently. And it's pretty enlightening, and you can really use that to your advantage when you come back.
Time to talk with Arkansas do-it-everything pitcher and hitter and infielder and designated hitter, Ben McLaughlin. Ben, I wasn't quite sure how to introduce you. If I were to introduce you in a specific way, as here is the Arkansas Razorbacks, what?
I mean, I would say the utility player in a sense, but when you think of utility player, wouldn't think pitcher. I think plays a little bit everywhere, but I would just go two-way player.
Two-way player works. Two-way player works. That's good. Wait, is there something you enjoy more than the other?
I mean, I would say a little bit more on the hitting side, but I love both. I mean, any way I could help the team and compete, I love both of them.
The feeling of solid contact wins over the feeling of dominance over a swing and miss?
I would say barely. If it's a tough decision, but I would have to give like a barrels. There's no better feeling than that.
There's not a lot of people that know what it's like to work on both of those at the same time at your age. How much work do you have to put into pitching at the same time that you've got to put work into fielding and hitting? And when it comes time for PFP, you got to go do that too.
Yeah. So my days, especially coming back from knee surgery, they're pretty long. I have to show up to the field very early, get my treatment in and get my knee back to trying to get my knee back to 100%. And then I'm whatever they're asking me to do, hitting, pitching, I'm normally running from the track center to do some hitting to the pitching facility to do some pitching and some throwing. And then when we do PFPs, I'll be doing three in a row and then running to first base to get my work in so I could do both.
You know, you mentioned about your knee, and I want to ask about specifically about it in a moment, but I thought about that the third game that you started as the designated hitter and you hit a triple. And I'm thinking, oh gosh, this guy just had knee surgery about like 6 weeks ago. What was that like having to leg out a triple?
I definitely did not feel the way it used to feel, if I'm being completely honest. But I mean, it's a great swing and I'm not the fastest guy. So off the bat, I'm never really thinking triple. But when I saw it kick off the wall, I knew I was going to have to do whatever it took to get to third base. And I mean, whatever I could do to help this team, like I feel good enough. My knee feels good enough. And it was just nice to put a good swing on the ball.
So you referenced the knee surgery. You had that injury on February the 25th.
Mm-hmm.
You came back to start playing again. You got back on the field pitching on mm-hmm. March the 28th. Knee surgery, 4 weeks, not even. That's amazing. How did that happen?
Yeah, so actually going into surgery, I met with my surgeon the day before, and he said there was about an 80-90% chance I was done for the whole year. Like I was going to be out 5 to 6 months. So I talked to my other surgeon and he said, hey, we don't know until we open you up. Like I'm making the decision. I don't want you to think that. So they opened it up and the tear wasn't as deep as they thought it was. So they kind of just shaved it down. And then they said 4 to 6 weeks, but I was just doing everything I could to, I wanted to get back on the field as soon as possible, whether it was pitching or hitting and whatever I could do at that time frame. That's what I wanted to do. So I think about 3.5 weeks is when I started pitching again. And I was just, it felt great. I had no problems with my knee. Everything felt good. And I will say one thing, when you get the adrenaline of a game, all that stuff really starts to feel a lot better.
So you're from Golden, Colorado. That's Denver, right?
Yeah, just like the suburbs of Denver.
Just next to Denver. What's mm-hmm. what's high school baseball like in Colorado? And by the way, I can't help it. I say Colorado. I'm probably wrong. What's the proper way to say Colorado? Colorado?
I say Colorado. Some kids, yeah. So like Peyton Stovall says Colorado all the time, and I think it's funny because it just sounds so different.
Okay. Well, what's high school baseball like in Colorado?
I would say it's very underrated in a sense. I think a lot of Colorado baseball players don't get the respect as the warmer states. And I just think that there's great talent out there, but it's really spread out. Like it's all over the place.
Elevation in Golden, Colorado. I love that I can continue to say it like that now. Is 5,771 feet. Fayetteville, Arkansas is 1,401 feet elevation. Can you tell the difference?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. The ball flies, that's for sure. I mean, in MLB baseball, they talk about it all the time. Coors Field's the best place to hit at, and no one wants to pitch in Coors Field. I'm a Rockies fan, and it's been a tough life to be a Rockies fan, but yeah, there's a huge, huge difference. The ball flies in Colorado compared to here.
What about what it's like to run in both places? Does it, do you, you know, you always hear that it, you'll get winded, you know, at elevation if you're not used to it. Is it the same in reverse?
Yeah. So I typically don't, when I'm home and then I go to whether it was Hutchinson or Fayetteville, I didn't really notice much. I mean, but when I go back for like winter break or the summer, all I know is when I'm doing my workouts, I'm breathing a little heavier and it is not quite as easy as it is in these states. Like everything takes a little bit longer. I got to take a little bit more rest. So it definitely does take some time to get used to it.
Do you think that experience playing on the same baseball field as your brother at Baum Walker Stadium, that's the kind of thing you'll be talking about, telling your kids and grandkids and so on and so forth about? One of the biggest moments like in McLaughlin family history is what it sounded like when you spoke with Bubba Carpenter after the game.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, me and my brother had that game circled for a very long time, and it was, I can't even explain to you the emotions going through my head when he stepped up to bat, when he was the tying run. I mean, of course, I'm a competitor and I want my team to win, but you never want to see your brother fail at the same time. But that was just amazing. Like it felt like a totally different game. Like I was smiling, but also nervous at the same time. It was just an unbelievable experience.
Seventh inning stretch. And hey, we got a really cool gift from Jill Holland, who owns Twinkle Tree Pottery, which is in Castle Rock, Colorado. And they are bases loaded snack dishes. I've got the round one. Bubba's got the square one for obvious reasons, Bubba, because you're a square. And I love this. I mean, I don't know what I could. It's got our bases loaded logo on it. With the bases loaded beer hat on top of the baseball. It would work perfect for a donut or some chips and put a little side of dip over here. Could put a sandwich on this. It would fit an Uncrustable, two or three of them, actually. You could put some beet chews on here. Maybe even a honey stinger or five on these bases loaded dishes. What do you think of yours, Bubba?
Oh, I love it. I appreciate Jill doing that for us. I haven't figured out what I'm going to do with mine yet. It's sitting on the table here. Dalton, my son, he wants it to go in his room. I don't know what he's going to use it for, but I think I'm going to keep control of it because he tends to break things like that. So, but yeah, I really appreciate her doing that. I thought it was really cool.
The logo says bases loaded with Phil and Bubba. Obviously, she made both of these for me because one of them doesn't say bases loaded with Bubba and Phil. Are you a little bothered of how this is podcast is titled?
Well, you know what, Phil, in the beginning I was, and there have been, I have gotten questions out there, you know, why it's Phil and Bubba and not Bubba and Phil. But I'm going to surprise you right here with this answer. I'm going to concede that you are the voice of the Razorbacks. I'm going to concede, and your name should go first. I'm just Bubba Carpenter. I just analyze stuff up in the booth.
Yeah, you're good. But here's what Bubba's really good at: showing up and being cute. I'll do the hard work. I'll do the legwork. I'll set the topics. I'll put the rundown together. I'll edit the podcast. I'll get the stats ready and print them out for him and all of that kind of stuff. Bubba just shows up and looks really cute and is really good at that too.
Well, I appreciate that. But, you know, I've kind of embraced it. There's Batman and Robin. What do you got? You got Shrek and Donkey.
I just can't even picture you in tights. Please don't. You're not Robin. We are not Batman and Robin.
We got Scooby and Shaggy. What? Who else? Han Solo. And what was the big gorilla thing? Chewbacca. Hans.
You can be. You are obviously Chewbacca in this existence. I would love to be Han Solo.
So I'm really going to.
I'll be Indiana Jones, and you can be Short Round. How's that?
Oh, I don't know about that. So anyway, I just concede it's Phil and Bubba. I'm not going to argue with it, but I really have had a couple of, I think I exaggerated when I said I've had a lot of complaints. I think maybe one complaint about why it's
and Phil that and complaint Bubba, came from Phil. Somebody who shares your last name, didn't it? What do you think about this? So there's a way to fix this if you ever needed to. We could change the name of the Bases Loaded podcast from Bases Loaded with Phil and Bubba to Bases Loaded with Fubba, just to combine our two names together. Would that be okay?
It doesn't really flow off the tongue. It's not really like, what is it? Benifer.
Benifer.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really like a Ben Affleck, Jennifer Lopez, Benifer, or whatever they were called. I don't know if it really flows off the tongue, Fubba. I don't know. I think we're going to stick with Phil and Bubba, but I appreciate the offer.
I mean, it could be Bases Loaded with Farrells. Moving into our eighth inning, let's talk injuries and the effect of the injuries. We've already kicked around Jared Wagner's injury quite a bit. Dylan Carter did not pitch on Saturday, and it was the first time in a couple of weeks that Dylan hadn't appeared twice in a weekend. It's normal soreness is what Dylan told me, is what Corey Wood says, what Dave Van Horn says. And soreness is a thing that pitchers deal with. It doesn't mean he's hurt. I think he'll be fine and ready to go this weekend. Tavian Josenberger, Parker Rowland, these are different situations. Tavian, it was a hamstring strain on a bunt attempt. He's trying to avoid the tag of the first baseman halfway up the first baseline and strained that left hamstring. He didn't need help to get off the field, but he grabbed at that left hamstring with every single step he took. And hamstrings are tricky. Like that's the biggest muscle in the body. I don't know exactly where in the hamstring the injury occurred. I just know that it takes a while for hamstrings to heal fully and to heal properly.
If you're a first baseman, that's just a big donkey, and he strains his hamstring, that's not a big deal. But when you're a leadoff guy, center fielder, that strains a hamstring, that's a big deal. It's something that could linger throughout the season. I strained a hamstring right before the All-Star break. Trey Hillman gave me the steel sign. My hammy was tight. I shook him off. He gave it to me again. I stole and pulled my hammy, and it lingered the rest of the season. And sometimes hammies are like that. Now we've got a little bit more technology. I think Corey Wood does a really good job of getting these guys patched back up and back out on the field. So they're going to do what they can to get Tavian back. But when you play like Tavian plays, a hammy's a big deal. A veteran guy's got to step up, Phil. I mean, you look at Slavens, Stovall, Borfin, those guys have to really step up now that Tavian's out. I mean, Slavens 2-for-11 with 2 RBIs. Stovall was 1-for-13 with 1 RBI. Borfin was 3-for-13 with 1 RBI this weekend. Those guys have to really step up and kind of pick up the slack. I know they've already done it once for Wagner being out of the lineup, but now, boy, someone really has to step up with Tavian being out.
I would assume Jace Borfin moves into center field, and I think he can play that position well, maybe not to the level of Josenberger, because he looks like an exceptional center fielder. I think Jace will handle center field well. Hunter Grimes moved into left field after Tavian's injury on Saturday. The other outfielder that is on the roster is Mason Neville, who's the freshman out of Las Vegas. He's gotten into 11 games. I'm not sure how they feel about Mason's bat. You know, I know Hunter Grimes, Dave likes the approach that he takes at the plate. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's Grimes that gets the bulk of the time in the outfield. But I don't know who the leadoff batter is going to be. Like, that's another aspect of this. It's not a matter necessarily of speed at this point. I think it's a matter of getting on base. And that's why I guess I wouldn't be surprised. Like, this would be an interesting thing to think about. Kendall Diggs is one of the best on this team at reaching base. In fact, he's got the second highest on base percentage on the team. He leads Arkansas in walks. I don't think he's the fastest guy on the team, but I don't think he's a lead foot. I wouldn't be surprised if Kendall Diggs bats leadoff just because of that on base percentage and having somebody on base ahead of Stovall or Borfin, I think would be the guys that are still hitting second. Outside of that, I'm not really sure who else profiles as a number one batter at the top of the order.
We kind of agree, Phil, for once. But Ben McLaughlin, I agree. Kendall Diggs is a guy that could be a leadoff guy. The only problem with that is he's an RBI machine. We always talk about how special he is late in the game with 2 runners on base, 3 runners on base. He always gets that big RBI hit. What about a Ben McLaughlin? I mean, he's not a speed guy, which at this point you said is speed We don't care. We want someone at the top of that lineup that's going to get on base. Now, I mean, Ben doesn't run like a leadoff guy, but we've had guys lead off before that weren't speed burners. So I think Ben could be a guy that could step in that role. You know, even a Peyton Holt, though, you could move things around a little bit, and Peyton Holt could be a little spark plug at the top of the lineup. I don't think Hunter Grimes is ready. I think he's going to be a good player. I don't think he's ready for it right now. So I would have to say one of those guys would probably be a good bet. I think Kendall would be a great guy, but then you're losing him out of the middle of that lineup. And boy, he's so good at driving in runs.
Got 4 weeks left before Hoover. And you're hoping that Josenberger's able to come back. Like, we know Jared Wagner will come back. A thumb injury, this is going to heal in a very specific amount of time. It's not a muscle injury. A muscle injury, especially a hamstring, there's just a gray area as to how fast of a healer he is, when he's able to run at full speed again. I wouldn't even know what to say. So I think it's just a waiting game with Tavian right now. And like you said before, got to find a way to win a few games without your lineup constructed the way that it had been when Arkansas moved into first place. And truthfully, like, they absorbed the loss of Jared Wagner just fine. But I think it's different when you lose your three-hole hitter, your catcher, and your center fielder leadoff guy in the span of 3 weeks. So I wouldn't be surprised to see things a little differently in the way that Dave is managing games. I think they might try to do a little more small ball. And the other aspect is the pitching staff will need to win some games for this team. I think there's enough talent on this team, and you're getting Brady Tigert back, expected this week against A&M. It'll end up being time for the pitching staff to win some games for the team. You know, like a 3-1 game, a 4-2 ball game. You got to find a way to win those games too.
Well, that's another good point, Phil. You know, we talk about guys stepping up. Because with Tavian out, Tavian's kind of the emotional leader of the team, kind of the heartbeat of the team, top of the lineup, an energy guy. You got to have a guy like that on your team. And so taking Tavian out, I mean, you look at runs produced, runs scored, Tavian not being in there, that's a couple of runs over the course of a weekend that you're lacking. That means there's a couple of runs less that the pitching staff's got to be able to give up. And so you're right. They have to step up as well. But I just think this team is gritty and tough, and I think they're going to find a way to get it done. Look, the key is just survive until these guys get back. And then I could see this as a perfect storm of all the adversity this team's gone through. Guys start to get healthy. You know, towards the end of the year, there's no telling what this team's capable of if we get those guys back healthy in time.
Dave talks about we just have to do enough to make a regional. And that's true. You saw that last year. Do enough to make a regional. And then when you, like you said, you start getting your guys back, then you'll have a sense of what's possible. And making a regional, I think, means for this team, anything is possible. If Wagner's back healthy, if Josenberger's back healthy, I think they're going to be okay. It's just, that's not going to be what they're playing with for the next 3 weeks. On to the ninth inning, the look ahead to the week. And Bubba, Arkansas plays Missouri State tonight in Springfield at 6:30. Safe to say, outside of Texas, Missouri State is probably Arkansas's number one non-conference rival. And you might look at Oklahoma State because of last year's regional, but the Hogs and Oklahoma State do not play as often as Arkansas and Missouri State do. And of course, you got postseason history with these two programs as well, and two of the longest tenured head coaches in the sport with Keith Gutton of Missouri State. I think he's in his 41st year as their head coach, and Dave Van Horn at Arkansas. So that ought to be a pretty good ball game tonight.
It's going to be a good game, Phil. And what worries me, though, is we have a quick turnaround. I would assume Missouri State don't start their series till Friday. We have a quick turnaround with A&M coming in town on Thursday. So pitching is going to be a little bit limited for us. Keith Dutton could load up and go for the win against the Razorbacks. quarterbacks. I know they'd like nothing more than to beat us, even if that means sacrificing maybe a weekend guy to get that win.
Interestingly, though, I'm looking at their schedule right now. So Missouri State hosts Arkansas tonight. Tomorrow, Missouri State is in Conway against UCA, and then they come back home to host Valparaiso. So it's a five-game week for Missouri State. And Bubba, Missouri State has lost their last four midweek games, although they've won nine consecutive games in the Missouri Valley Conference. So they're killing it on the weekend. They're not killing it in the midweek. This might be a chance for Arkansas to get a much-needed road victory in a midweek game. And then you got A&M this weekend. And the Aggies are one of those teams that started slow, but they're coming on right now. They've won four consecutive series. And you know a Jim Schlossnagel team is going to do a lot of those little things. That's what they were known for at TCU. And this A&M team right now is playing really good baseball.
Well, the thing about A&M, you know, you look at them coming in. They're second in the SEC in hitting. They've been giving up some runs, though. They're 12th in pitching. So, I mean, there's a little bit there, but, you know, they're going to do a lot offensively, and so our pitchers are going to have to be on their game. You know, they had a big series win against Kentucky this weekend, and I still haven't figured Kentucky out, you know, but they won a couple of close games against Kentucky on Saturday, first two games. I think Friday night got rained out, I believe, then they won a doubleheader against Kentucky. So they're going to be a good team. Schlossnagel always, I mean, his teams always play fundamental baseball. They do the little things, similar to a Razorback style of baseball, just not quite as good. So we'll see. It's going to be tough, Phil.
Well, it's Arkansas and A&M Thursday at 7 o'clock, Friday at 6, and then an 11 o'clock morning game on Saturday. Tonight is a 6:30 first pitch against the Bears in Springfield. 6 o'clock is the airtime. Bubba, looking forward to seeing you Thursday at Paul Walker Stadium. And we'll see if this Arkansas team can bounce back after a tough weekend.
You know, Phil, I think we're going to be fine. We've got the Paul Walker home field advantage. So I think it's going to be a good weekend for us. I think we'll get back on the winning ways. I think it's going to be a good weekend. Looking forward to it. So I'll see you Thursday night, and go Hog.
All right, everybody. That's Bases Loaded, episode number 11, and we'll see you next week. For my partner, Bubba Carpenter, I'm Phil, and we'll see you at the ballpark.